Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's another edition of the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have you here on Resurrection Sunday. A lot of excitement felt by all here at the McBurney compound. And down at Denver Bible Church this morning, where I and the kiddos in the children's church, we talked about the resurrection. We talked about Easter, and we talked about Passover. And we tied them all together, and, a great time was had by all. And we wish you all the blessings of the living God here on Resurrection Sunday. It's good to have you with us as we move into the news of the day. Where do we want to start? Do we want to start with the politics? No, let's not. Well, let's start with Obamacare. You'll remember that the Republicans failed to repeal Obamacare recently in the not-too-distant past. And I just pulled this down during the week from Fusion.net. Did you know, he asked, his extremely attractive audio engineer, did you know that abortions are tax-deductible under Obamacare? Is that a surprise? According to IRS.gov, you can include in medical expenses as tax deductions the amount you pay for a legal abortion. Yeah, and the Republicans weren't even able to come together on that under the fearless leadership of, the Democrats in the White House. So it's just disappointing is all that abortions remain tax deductible under Obamacare, and there doesn't seem to be much anyone can do about it. But we can't really say we're surprised, right? I actually did not know that, so I can't say I was shocked by the headline, but I was somewhat surprised because I know that the stipulations on tax deductions can be fairly involved, and you have to follow the rules quite stringently when it comes to, say, deducting meal expenses or mileage. You have to keep a mileage. I wonder how strict they are on the reporting of your legal abortion for a tax deduction. And how do you submit a receipt? Do you get a receipt? Because I know you have to pay cash, at least at the Planned Parenthood here in the Denver metro area. One must pay cash. And I suppose they give you a little cash receipt like you get at a little restaurant. Just tick it off there. $500 cash paid on such and such a date. And then, of course, all the records are destroyed, and so the IRS can't go back and check. So, there you have it. That's all. I guess we'll just leave it at that. Just depressing. So we move deeper into the politics file as we talk about the Democrats in the White House. President Trump, according to the Washington Post, is adopting many of the centrist positions he railed against on the campaign trail, policies of more centrist Republicans, and even at times Barack Obama, are being formulated in the White House as we speak. It's as I warned you last week. You people elected a Democrat. Yes, the Washington Post, my apologies, say that this is a period of rapid evolution for Donald Trump. A period of rapid evolution from campaign populist and nationalist to just plain old Democrat. Yeah. So now Donald Trump, he's the same old liberal Democrat he always was. Just now he has bombers and missiles. Oh, and we want to send our congratulations out for the dropping of the Moab, the massive ordnance airburst bomb on the ISIS tunnel complex there in Afghanistan. Finally, I mean, he bombed Assad to send a message. Now he's fine. Well, he bombed ISIS in Afghanistan and sent more of a message, at least to about 100 or so of the people who were hanging out in that tunnel complex when the bomb went off. That was quite impressive video, must say. That was something to see. And while I am encouraged that America is once again asserting herself militarily across the political, geopolitical landscape, I must say it all seems a bit, it seems a bit muddled and a bit confused is all. For instance, you remember that America, President Trump and the Democrats who advise him launched, I believe it was 59 Tomahawk missiles. And I went on the air Monday with Bob Enyart, and I asked him the question that's on the lips of everyone who's a never-Trumper and an anti-Trumper. The question is, well, what if we don't know if Assad himself actually carried out the chemical attack for which the Democrats in the White House bombed him? And Bob gave a brilliant answer. He said it almost doesn't matter. It almost doesn't matter. And what he really meant to say by that was it doesn't matter. That's what he really meant to say by that. And I think I would equate this with the biblical principle of measuring the distance from a murder victim to the closest city. When there's no evidence, no outright evidence of who exactly committed the crime, God instructed Israel to measure the distance from the murder victim to the closest city, and that city would bear the guilt. And since Hafez al-Assad, no, not Hafez, that's his father, Bashir al-Assad, since Assad had done it before, and is a generally just a guy of very low character, a sleazy rat-faced dictator who's murdered people from the time he was in junior high school on behalf of his father, Hafez. Well, it was just as good to strike him as anyone else in the region. And a principle was adhered to. And a situation was resolved as far as the whole red line and all that. And so Donald Trump and the Democrats advising him stumbled backwards into doing the right thing. Or at least approaching doing the right thing. It would have been better if he had bombed more than just Assad. But, that's what he did. And now he's bombed ISIS in Afghanistan. And therefore, I have to give credit to Donald Trump and the Democrats in the White House for stumbling backwards into doing something productive. Positive, I would say. Yeah, I don't know if I would say it's good that America is asserting herself militarily across the globe, but it is positive. And so there. I've given Donald Trump credit, I believe, for the first time in his presidency for anything. Scanning my memory banks, trying to remember, have I given him credit for anything at all? I don't think I had. But then on the heels of that, we find out that one of the Democrats in the White House who has the president's ear, probably the number one Democrat in the White House advising, guiding, and influencing the president is Ivanka Trump. That's Don's daughter. And apparently, according to Politico anyways, they say that in the weeks following Donald Trump's inauguration, Ivanka Trump quietly reached out to the president of Planned Parenthood and requested a sit-down chat with Cecile Richards. And they had what Politico calls an under-the-radar meeting. And this meeting, according to Politico, has not been reported on until right now, or at least in Politico this past week. Nobody really knew about that, but it has been. It has been reported on now. And we have some comments on how that meeting went from none other than Don Laguens, the executive vice president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. She says that Cecile Richards was explaining to Ivanka that the money that Planned Parenthood gets from the government, from her dad, now, and Congress, that money doesn't actually go toward abortions, you see. That's what Cecile explained to Ivanka. And Dawn says that we were clearing up misinformation about how this all works, and a very productive meeting. So Ivanka sat down with Planned Parenthood. Donald Trump offered them to keep getting their half a billion a year if they would just stop killing babies, and they said no thank you. And well, that's the end of it, pretty much. Really nothing further to report at this point, unless Cecile and Ivanka move in together or something like that. And if something like that were to happen, we'll report on that. They do beautiful, beautiful work, you see, at Planned Parenthood. And beautiful, wonderful, beautiful things. And Ivanka doesn't have a problem sitting down with Cecile Richards. Me, personally, I don't think I could be in the same room with her. I mean, not without getting arrested. Or at least causing a ruckus. At the very least, would be causing a significant ruckus. But Ivanka seems perfectly comfortable sitting down with Cecile Richards. And, well, that shouldn't be any surprise, seeing as Donald Trump's entire family are a bunch of lifelong pro-abort Democrats. And the only thing that has changed is that he suckered a lot of conservatives into voting him into the White House. But let's go now to more relevant news, or at least news that we can all do something about. Because this is reason number 1,107 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. That's something you can do. That's a positive step you can do. A positive action that you can take, not even positive. A good thing that you could do would be to get or keep your kids out of the government schools. And here's the reason, as reported by LifeSite News. A hapless Oklahoma mother allowed her daughter to go on a school field trip only to have her return with a contraceptive implant. That's right. Yes, the public school is called Langston Hughes Academy in the greater Tulsa area. And they host an annual sex ed class where this particular victim of the government schools attends. And it's hosted by Youth Services of Tulsa. And, well, daughter told mom, hey, we got a sex ed field trip, mom. Mom thought that her daughter only wanted to learn more, just to get information. And so mom allowed her daughter to go on a field trip sponsored by her public school to the local clinic. What clinic here? Does it say what clinic? Well, it's a clinic. You'll have to use your imagination. Youth Services of Tulsa has a teen pregnancy program called Pregnot. Pregnot, they call it. It's a program that was begun with about $1.5 million in tax money from the Barry Ho Health and Human Services Office. Their Office of Adolescent Health gave $1.5 million to Youth Services of Tulsa for their Pregnot program. And its stated goal is to reduce pregnancy among black and brown youth. I'm sorry, among poor youth, they say. Ages 11 to 19 via youth-friendly contraceptives. Youth-friendly contraceptives, which according to the Youth Services of Tulsa, those are the best kind, are the youth-friendly kind. In this particular case, this young victim of the government schools was implanted with Norplant on the field trip without her mother's knowledge. The government agency surgically implanted Norplant inside the daughter's arm. And shockingly enough, Youth Services of Tulsa stands by. Now, mom is upset. Mom gave an interview that was reported on by LifeSite News, and she's upset that they implanted her daughter with a youth-friendly contraceptive without mom's knowledge. And Youth Services of Tulsa admonished mom, saying, hey, We don't have to tell the parents when contraceptives are implanted inside school children. Didn't you know that, Mom? Title 10 of the federal code allows for youths as young as age 12 to receive birth control, even abortifacient contraceptives, without a parent's consent. The academy, the principal of the school, defended the action, saying that the school, we merely transported your daughter to the clinic. We didn't actually implant the thing. We just gave her a ride. How did she get implanted? When did she get implanted? How dare you even ask? Principal goes on to say the student was well within her rights of Title 10, which is a federal guideline that provides reduced cost family planning services to brown and black girls of reproductive age. I'm sorry, they just said persons of all reproductive ages, especially black and brown girls. But that's just my opinion. Let's see. The hapless mother says, quote, I just feel like my rights as a parent were violated. I think they should have given us more information. I thought she was just going to get information. I didn't know she could come home with an implant. I thought she'd come home and we could discuss what was best for my child. You know, sit down and have a conversation between mom and daughter about whether or not choking off our progeny in pursuit of wanton sexual escapades might be the best course of action. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview. The Church Militant, which is the organization that interviewed the hapless Tulsa mother whose child was implanted behind mom's back. Church Militant asked the school if parents were given an opt-out form. That's a form you fill out to opt out of things that the government schools might do that could violate, well, everything that's right and good in the universe. You get a chance to opt out there. Well, the hapless mom says she never received an opt-out form. She was never given the option to opt out. And I just want to send out a message to all of our listeners that if you have to fill out opt-out forms, if opting out is a part of your child's education, well, you might want to rethink the whole thing. Just go ahead and opt out. Preemptively opt out. Just get your kids out of the government schools. Reason number 1107, because they might be implanted with chemical abortifacients and contraceptives behind your back. By the way, mom says she thought her rights were violated. Well, mom, you sacrificed your rights when you turned your child over to the godless government schools day after day after week after week after month after year. You gave up your rights, Mom. Now, you were violated. There's no doubt about that, as was your daughter. But you bear some responsibility in that, Mom. And so now all of you who've heard, now you know. If you send your children into the godless government schools, you're sinning against God and your child. And when you find yourself violated and insulted and implanted, or even worse, well, you bear some responsibility now that you've heard this. So please, just get out. Opt out. Yes, that will be the clarion call from the Weekly Worldview this week. Just opt out. Now, will move into the justice file, into the halls of the legislature of the state of Colorado, where CBS in Denver reports that teen sexting is giving Colorado lawmakers an uncomfortable dilemma. What's the dilemma, according to CBS? Now, listen to how they put this. They ask the question, when is it a naughty photo between teens, which is a modern form of flirting, and when is it child pornography? So right there, you have to stop them and say, wait a second. You're saying that exchanging pictures like this is a modern form of flirting? I think that's a bridge too far, my friend. I don't think that's... If that is a modern form of flirting, then flirting has gone way too far. And I would choose to opt out. But the legislature, they don't know what to do. And the main reason, well, let's just read from the story from CBS. They say the Democrat House, the Democrat-controlled House here in the state of Colorado started work this past week aimed at discouraging teen sexting. So you've got Democrat politicians working to discourage such behavior because right now, and this is what makes them uncomfortable, right now, any child in possession of an image of another minor, any such image, is guilty of a felony-level offense. That's right. It's a felony to have these kinds of pictures on your phone. Now, CBS goes on to report that that law is seldomly enforced. And child psychologists say that sexting is common and normal. Nothing to freak out about, Mom, Dad. Your daughter is exchanging explicit photos of herself with other kids at school, and it's all very common and normal. It's just like in the 1950s when they were chewing gum. These type of things happen, Mom. Calm down. Well, the legislators in the state of Colorado have introduced a couple of bills designed to... it's kind of hard to say what they're designed to do. One would send kids who are caught doing such things to education classes. Education classes that will be set up with no possibility of felony charges. You just go to the class. Possibly it's organized by party officials and their relatives. Possibly there are relatives of certain legislators who may or may not be employed in administering such courses to the youngsters. But there certainly would be no felony charges. That was option number one that the Democrat-controlled legislature here in Colorado was considering. The other option sponsored by the Republicans included the option for a felony charge depending on the circumstances of the case. And, well, a House committee in charge of kicking this legislation around, they've just delayed a vote because they don't know what to do. They're just not sure what to do. Some reports indicate that the delay is because Colorado lawmakers are a bunch of porn-addicted sex perverts, unable to get past just wanting to see the pictures. And so they had to just call the whole thing off. That's just some reports. We haven't independently verified those beyond... simply making the assertion, in our opinion, that could be the cause. So it's all just normal now. That psychologists are saying that this is normal, and CBS in Denver says, hey, this is just a modern form of flirting. Get over it. Come on, kids will be kids. So this should this be a... Oh, yes, this all erupted into controversy. You'll remember in 2015, Canyon City, Colorado, when over 100 students in the school were found with explicit images of each other on the phones, and nobody knew what to do because to follow the law would have meant to charge them all with a felony. And they didn't want to do that because, I don't know why. I'm not able to get my mind around it. Modern form of flirting. I myself would freak out if something like this were to happen in my family. This would be horrible. Just, oh, no. What do we have here? I've been handed. by my extremely attractive audio engineer. This week's version of All Recipes Magazine is from the newspaper.
No, it's
junk mail.
No, it's a magazine.
All Recipes Magazine, which I'm sure many housewives are familiar with. Is that bad to even say the word housewife?
No.
I think that's offensive. On the back cover, which is, this is prime advertising real estate. On the back cover of this month's All Recipes Magazine is, it's an IKEA commercial with a couple of homos piled onto a couch. That's just disgusting. All homes are created equal, says the fag. I mean the flag. All homos are created equal. All homes are created equal. IKEA says you deserve a home that you love, where you can live comfortably with loved ones, as the two homos ogle each other deeply in their eyes. A sustainable home that looks good, works well, and is friendly to your wallet. Because no matter what you do or who you are or how much you make, you deserve to make your dreams yours. It's fantastic. We're with IKEA. Unfortunately, we don't have any S's in our name. But we like to service the community here at IKEA. Look at that. Picture of homos piled on the couch as an advertisement. This is part of my prediction that if things are not reined in shortly, all advertising will become pornographic. That was borderline pornographic right there. Yeah. But then again, reporting on the Colorado legislature, well, that's borderline pornographic, for crying out loud. Let's set that story aside, as disturbing as all that is. Let's see. Let's go into the justice file and discuss something that's not nearly as disgusting, but is quite disturbing, and that is the catch and release tolerance program that has been promoted by lawyers in America for about 100 years. And we see the fruit of it here in Denver this past week. A stolen SUV crashed into a school bus. And bodies were flying everywhere, and glass and plastic and steel and shards and children. Nobody was critically injured, but some were seriously injured. And it turns out the driver of the stolen SUV is a fellow named Luis Ortiz. He was arrested after the crash that happened in broad daylight in the middle of the day after school, school bus full of kids. Luis Ortiz had stolen the SUV and is now facing charges of reckless vehicular assault, vehicular eluding, resulting in injury. Are there any other creative charges that we can come up with? Vehicular eluding, resulting in injury, for which I assume one could be sentenced to 14 months and 7 days. Vehicular eluding, resulting in injury. He's in a Denver jail right now, is Luis Ortiz, without bail. Mr. Ortiz has a criminal history dating back to 1989 when he was first arrested on a weapons offense. Since then, he's been in and out of the Colorado correctional system on drug charges, trespassing charges, vehicular eluding. Not vehicular eluding resulting in injury. No, this was just vehicular eluding. He's also been charged with escape and was on parole at the time he crashed his stolen SUV into a school bus full of children. So he's been caught and released and regurgitated out of the justice system about a dozen times over the last 20 or so years. And it begs the question, right? Whose fault is this? That a guy like this is out free, able to steal an SUV and potentially kill a busload of children. How is it that this happens? How do we find ourselves and Luis Ortiz here? And when will legislators and judges be held responsible for what they have done? They have created, and I say legislators and judges because they're all mostly just a bunch of lawyers. The legislators, the judges, and the parasitic lawyers who make their livings off this catch-and-release system, they're mostly lawyers. And how do they do this? What is it that drives the mind of a legislator to pass laws under which someone convicted of drug charges, trespassing, vehicular eluding, and escape ends up free on the streets of America. How is it that that happens? How is it that the justice system devolves to the level where someone convicted multiple times of misdemeanor and felony offenses is a free person? How does this happen? On parole or otherwise? How is it that this happens? Well, I think it goes back to what I was talking about regarding the legislature here in Colorado. I mentioned earlier that the reason they can't deal with sexting is because, well, certain reports indicate that they're a bunch of porn-addicted sex perverts. And they're also, by the way, and this is just my opinion, but you got to ask yourself, how did we get here? You've got a bunch of lawyers who become judges, who become legislators, who are guilt-ridden, wicked, godless lawyers. And it's their job to create the laws. And they have created the laws in their own image. And therefore, a fellow like Luis Ortiz can be processed in and out of the justice system for 20-plus years and ends up smashing a bus full of school children. And none of the people who processed him in and out of the justice system are held accountable in any way. What if he had killed the entire busload of kids? Well, to the people who process this dirtbag in and out of the justice system, it wouldn't matter a whit. It wouldn't change a thing if he had killed them all. And he very well could have. But when you've got a bunch of guilt-ridden, wicked, godless lawyers, and you assign them the job of creating the law, well, they create the law in their own image. I think I figured out. I figured out a line. I heard him say, "Bloody Mary's gonna find me again." I think that was a line in that song right there. So nobody's ever had any idea what was ever said in that song until right now. I've deciphered that Bloody Mary's gonna find me again. I heard him say, "My baby." That's about it. All right. Let's see. Where were we? Well, we're in the midst of the justice file. And I did recognize that B3, though. Man, that was smoking. That was very, that was one thing that you're able to decipher is that classic Hammond B3 sound coming through and soothing the pain of reading through the news of the day, which can be quite painful. And speaking of quite painful, let's go to Little Rock, Arkansas. Where you remember last week we had reported the exciting news that starting the week after Easter, the governor there in Arkansas had planned to execute 8 inmates over the course of 11 days before the execution drugs expired, ironically enough, because you wouldn't want to give someone you're trying to kill an expired drug that could have a negative long-term consequence, ironically enough. Well, that's all. Well, by the time we reported it, one judge had already had already stayed one of the executions. We were down to seven. By the middle of the week, another judge issued a stay of another execution. We were down to six. And now a federal judge, U.S. District Judge Christine has stepped in and put the kibosh on all of the executions, saying that she is a guilt-ridden, evil, wicked lawyer who feels guilty about rendering just judgment upon anyone. Well, wait a minute. She didn't say that. That's what I said. Why did Judge Christine Baker, a U.S. District Judge, what happened here is, as you remember, this is from the Associated Press, Arkansas had a plan to execute eight inmates in 11 days, saying, but the judge has said no. And she says it's her opinion that the men have the right to challenge a drug protocol that could expose them to severe pain. That's what it is. Speaking of painful, yes. Now, the state, they're still hoping to start executions on Monday. They filed an appeal. But it's Easter Sunday, and nobody's listening to the appeal. We'll see what happens Monday, but I would bet dollars to donuts that no executions take place in the state of Arkansas for the next 3 months. I'll make that bold prediction. Not a single execution will take place in the state of Arkansas for the next 3 months. And if I am incorrect, I will be extremely pleased to have been incorrect. Now, you'll remember that Arkansas has a supply of one of its lethal injection drugs, midazolam. They all expire on April 30th, so Asa Hutchinson took that as an opportunity to say, hey, we better use this up before it expires because we don't want to violate protocol. And he was lining them up. These are all convicted murderers, by the way, who deserve to die. And in my opinion, deserve some severe pain, each and every one of them. But Judge Christine has said no. And let's see, in her order, Judge Christine said there was a significant possibility that the inmates could successfully challenge the state's execution protocol. While the state demonstrated it does not plan to torture the inmates do have a right to challenge the method of execution in an attempt to show that it, quote, creates a demonstrated lack of, demonstrated risk of severe pain, unquote. She also noted in her opinion that the execution team did not have antidotes on hand in case there was trouble with any of the drugs. If any of the drugs you're using to kill the person fail to work, you need an antidote. Well, would not the antidote be something that would kill the patient in this case? If the object is to kill the patient and the drugs aren't working, the antidote... Well, maybe that's a bit confusing. I would think they don't have antidotes. Okay. She also was upset with the harsh schedule, the frenetic pace of executions imposed on these officials, and their lack of recent execution experience causes me concern, said the judge. It's like the old dilemma of the kid just out of school looking for a job. He needs to get experience, but nobody will give him a job so he can have experience, so he can't get a job. The execution team down in Arkansas, they need to hone their skills. They need some experience, but the judge won't let them get any experience. Hence, they haven't done any executions, so they're a little bit rusty, and they're not sure. Maybe they'll administer the drugs in the wrong order, and perhaps the drugs won't work, but that's okay. We'll grab the antidote and we'll kill the patient with the antidote, I suppose. It's all very confusing and very depressing. And so a federal district judge has stayed the hand of justice from these eight convicted murderers once again. And the lawyers will argue about this and submit billing on this for at least the next 3 months before anyone is executed. I would frankly be shocked if anyone was executed in the state of Arkansas within the next year. That's how bad it is. Because there's a war against the death penalty. Because when your nation is ruled by guilt-ridden, godless lawyers, they have a hard time judging other people because they're so guilty. I mean, they still have something of a conscience and they feel bad. It's hard to impose justice on someone when you know you're perhaps more guilty than they are. And so there's a war on the death penalty from the leftist agitators, but there's just a general inability to recognize justice in the minds of lawyers, legislators, governors, mayors, all of those people. And, well, we can go to the politics file for a story about the war on the death penalty from the Times of Israel. And the Times of Israel participates this week, this past week, perhaps inadvertently, perhaps just because of who they are, a pile of liberals publishing a newspaper called the Times of Israel, naturally would publish a headline in line with the war on the death penalty. The headline from the Times of Israel this past week screamed out, "Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Iraq among top five global executioners." That's the headline. So automatically, the headline of the story would lead one, an uninitiated person, to look at that and say, boy, executions must be terrible. Iran, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, those are horrible places run by dictators and just scary people. So executions must be bad. Well, the story from the Times of Israel is based on a report from Amnesty International, the one of the lead factions in the ongoing war on capital punishment. And when you read the details of the story, it's obvious that all of these nations that are cited in the headlines are guilty of executing people for purely political reasons, political dissent and whatnot. You've got Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Iraq were the top five. China, the Times of Israel reports that China still outpaces the entire rest of the world combined when it comes to executions. And by the time the average public school graduate finishes the first few sentences of the story, which is about all they're capable of reading, they're just convinced that executions are bad because all these bad people carry them out for bad reasons, unjust reasons. And so the Times of Israel and Amnesty International continue to be in the forefront of the ongoing war on capital punishment. And we here at the Weekly Worldview, we are not against the death penalty. In fact, we're advocates of the death penalty to be executed in a swift and painful manner upon due conviction of a capital criminal, because this will help to reduce and even prevent crime. At least on behalf of those people who are executed, they will not commit any more crimes, but it would also put the fear of God into criminals, people who might be thinking about, maybe they're upset, say you've got a domestic situation, you're not happy with your spouse, and the thought crosses your mind, I just want to kill her. But then you remember the execution that you heard about and how the executed convict writhed and suffered in pain, and it was horrible and awful, and everybody saw it. It was terrifying. And you might just say, you know what, I'm not going to kill her. I'm just going to try to get over this. Maybe you patch things up. Maybe you can't stay together. I don't know. But you don't kill her, right? Because you have the fear of a painful execution. And that's something people think about. Criminals ponder the consequences of their action. It's part of the equation. Now, oftentimes they don't make the right decisions because criminals are not known as the best problem solvers. But quite often, it would prevent... Well, let's just go to the domestic tranquility file. For a report from San Bernardino, you remember San Bernardino where the Islamists carried out their terrorist attack? Well, this past week, another terrifying situation played out, and there wasn't an Islamist in sight. In fact, the only thing in view was American civilization. A man walked into a primary school, and he shot and killed his wife and then shot and killed himself in the middle of the day. Again, broad daylight, in front of God and everybody. KTLA Los Angeles reports the following. The motive for the shooting was not immediately known. That's the first line. Second sentence. The couple had only been married for a few months and had been separated for a month or so. And so within the first two sentences, KTLA admitted they didn't know what was happening, and then they cited exactly what was happening. The couple was married and they had been separated. It was a domestic situation. And instead of the husband, instead of being fearful of a painful and swift execution should he carry out his desire for vengeance, instead of pondering that, all this upset husband did, all he had to feed his mind, was his hate and rage and anger and jealousy and whatever it was that was consuming him, until he went and acted upon it and shot and killed his wife, wounded two children in the classroom, and psychologically scarred dozens of children who saw and were present at the time of the murder. But KTLA says the motive was not immediately known. Well, the motive was fairly obvious. A rocky relationship, an irate husband, and not an inkling of fear for justice. And hence he acts on his anger and hatred and rage. He murders a woman in broad daylight, and there's not a legislator or a judge or a mayor or a governor or a lawyer who will be held responsible for this. Yeah, just not having a lot of fun on the show today. Not a lot of yucking it up, you know. There we go. Go back to the IKEA ad. Oy vey. Right. Yes. Yeah. It's not a real fun week. Maybe it's the cockfights that got me. They've got a couple things happening here at the McBurney compound. Number one, my workbench. In my little shop area has been turned into a chicken triage area where we've been trimming the spurs of the roosters because they're engaging in some pretty brutal cockfights. I gotta tell you. The other morning I woke up and doing my thing, I came out of the shower and I'm looking out the the window of the bedroom, and here's the two Americana roosters, and one runs across the yard to the other, and they start circling each other, and they bend down, and they fluff up their neck feathers, and I almost wanted to grab a wad of ones and start making bets. It was exciting. I got to tell you. I felt a little bit guilty about it. But, I mean, I can see how that could be a spectator sport. Because, I mean, those guys get after it. It's pretty vicious. Yeah, well, we had to trim their spurs, you see, because they were bludgeoning one another. And eventually, one of them probably would have killed the other. But by the way, we don't advocate cockfighting in any way. And these cockfights are not organized in any way. They just happen. And so I got my Dremel, and I'm grinding the spurs off the chickens now on my workbench. It's now chicken triage area for spur grinding. But we got them all ground down now, so now it's like they got boxing gloves on. And they're like, thup, 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 and they can't really punch holes in each other. And so that's all been nice. But maybe it's that. Maybe it's the cockfights that have gotten me thrown off a little bit. Or maybe it's the slavery. The slavery, I said. Yes. I said slavery. Just to make things more humorous, let's go to the Hell on Earth file. And we'll talk about the fact that right now in the modern world, migrants from West Africa, according to the International Business Times, migrants from West Africa are being openly traded in public slave markets across Libya. Yeah, survivors of the Libyan, what do you call that? A civil war? No, just hell on earth. Survivors have told the International Organization for Migration how there are slave markets and private prisons all over Libya now. The going rate for a migrant is around $350. According to the IOM, migrants who go to Libya while trying to get to Europe have no idea of the torture archipelago that awaits them just over the border. They become commodities to be bought and sold and discarded when they have no more value. This is circa 2017. In the birthplace, by the way, of African slavery, Libya. The Libyan Arabs are the godfathers of modern chattel slavery, and it continues to this day. And it's a shame that America had no moral capital when it was required in order to quell the hell on earth that has developed in Libya. But there you have it. Slaves in Libya. It's horrible. What do we have here from the war file from New Delhi? The Associated Press reports that Bangladesh has executed a top leader of a banned Islamic group and two of his accomplices for their involvement in a grenade attack against a British diplomat. And you think, wow, this is awesome. They're taking swift action against the terrorists. Well, I mean, at least they executed the guy. But the grenade attack against a British diplomat occurred in 2004, which is almost 17 years ago, when Harkatul Jihad, Chief Mufti Hanan, and two of his accomplices carried out a grenade attack against a British diplomat. Well, they were hanged this past week near Dhaka in Bangladesh. The death sentence were originally issued in 2008, which is, what, almost 10 years ago. So it's almost as if America, one of the chief exports of America is a confused, feckless, ineffective justice system. And even in Bangladesh, they mimic the fact that that the justice simply cannot be arrived upon because everyone is so confused. In Bangladesh, what are you going to do? Sad. Then I got the bomb here. Oh, yes, the mother of all bombs, the Moab. Massive ordnance airburst bomb has killed at least 94 Islamic State fighters who were scurrying around in the tunnels of Afghanistan. And as I said earlier, it is positive that America is reasserting herself militarily. Is it good? Well, we shall see. See, the problem is that America doesn't have the moral capital that it did once have. What with the 60 million murders of innocent children, legally, in our midst, right in our neighborhoods. So we've declined significantly. And now we're throwing around bombs. Okay, so people are worried about the cost of the bombs. I heard this was something of concern. About $1 million for a Tomahawk missile, $15 million for the Moab bomb. So let's run the math on that. 60, so that's $75 million, right? Roughly $75 million expended to kill, roughly 100 people. $75 million. Is it a good investment? Well, America makes $75 million falling out of bed in the morning. And for all of you who would execute terrorism and foment Islamism around the world, we can make that kind of money anytime, and we can drop it on your head all day from dawn till dusk every day if we decide to do it. So it's a good investment. How much is one American life worth? Well, 75 million pales in comparison. So I'm happy whenever the United States drops ordnance upon Islamists and others who foment terror and slavery and all this other horrible, disgusting, vicious, brutal activity. I'm happy when we do it. But it's tainted. My happiness is tainted because it's all so hypocritical for America to decide that we are going to be the arbiters of justice when we can't even figure out what to do about sexting, and we can't even execute a murderer because we can't figure out if the antidote might work. If we can't kill him, should we kill him? Maybe the drugs are going to expire, but the judge cheated on his wife and they had an abortion, and now the judge can't see fit to render judgment. And so it's as if the entire infrastructure of our government and our justice system is just riddled with corruption and rotten filth and disgusting. They legalize sodomy and they criminalize preaching the gospel, and it's just, well, let's just say it takes the bloom off the rose, so to speak, when America bombs terrorists. I used to have a much better feeling about it back when I was much more naive. All right. Now, let's see. Where are we at? We're doing good here. Bill O'Reilly left Fox News this past week for a long-planned vacation to Italy and the Vatican. Yes, he went straight to the Vatican, where I'm sure he was rushed right into the Pope's room and granted absolution for his many manifold sins. He said it was long-planned. He goes to the Vatican every 3 or 4 years to try to rid himself of the guilt of being such a despicable human being. And apparently that's where he is this week. That's the thing about a Bill O'Reilly confession. It takes like 7 days and 7 nights, right? The Pope's like trying to stay awake, listening to Bill. He can barely lift his hands to give him the signal there. Yeah. How did Bill O'Reilly originally come on the scene? Was it Showbiz Tonight, was it? No? Entertainment Tonight? Maybe Extra, was it?
I have no idea.
TMZ? No, TMZ didn't exist. I know. He was a paper boy for the National Enquirer. That's how he got his big break in media. Really? No, I think it was Inside Edition. Inside Edition, which was a sleazy tabloid television show all about Hollywood and the various prostitutes and drug addicts and their various activities. That's how Bill O'Reilly, that's where he cut his teeth. And now he's America's foremost conservative, misogynistic creep, is what, in my opinion. Of course, I don't want Mr. O'Reilly to sue me. And I'm looking forward to reading the next book that guy wrote for him. It'll be Killing Confession. Bill O'Reilly wears out the Pope. I don't know. See if he can get an author working on that. Let's see. We're almost out of time, and I do want to report on. I don't want to report on that. Oh, aha! Here we go. Here's something. Since we haven't had hardly any fun on the show, and I hate to leave you all depressed, a Slovak company called Aeromobile has says it's releasing an improved version of its flying car. And the car is going to be powered by hybrid propulsion. Those of you who've been listening to The Worldview, since we first went on the air, I don't think we ever went on the air. We went on the internet in 1999 before it was even cool. We were doing a podcast before there was an iPod. Nobody even knew what kind of pod was going to come. But the podcast started in 1999. And you know that since that time, I've been wondering, where's my flying car? Because when I was in eighth grade civics class, I was told by the teacher that by the year 2000, we would have flying cars. I was looking forward to it. I've been disappointed. Well, Aeromobile says they have a car powered by hybrid propulsion, and the wings sweep back against the body when the vehicle is in driving mode, and apparently, at least according to the Sun newspaper, the car is in compliance with the existing regulatory frameworks for both cars and airplanes. The company raised about $4 million in its latest funding round to help with production. And nobody knows how much the cars are going to cost exactly. But the Sun says if you're budgeting to get one, budget somewhere in the range of a lot. So they're going to be expensive, but that would be worth looking into. So I don't want to report on the mayor of Seattle from the Queering of America file. He's been accused of raping teenagers in the 80s after giving them crack. I don't want to report on that because that might be taken as insensitive to the LGBT community. But the Seattle Times decided to report on it, even though they didn't report on allegations that had come out a few years ago. But now the charges and the allegations are piling up, and there's a lot of similarities. And it turns out that the Mayor Ed Murray of Seattle, a crusader for marriage equality, he's been accused of being a drug-addled pedophile since the 1980s, and we're all shocked by that. But I don't want to report on that. And so then that's it. That's the show. But I appreciate everyone being here, and I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and AmericanRideToLife.com, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.